Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hi folks, and welcome to episode 37 of the Epochs of the Lotus Eaters. I'm joined, as always, by Bo, and today we're going to be talking about Romulus, the mythological founder of Rome. I'm staking out my territory right from the start here. Romulus didn't exist. Lycurgus, probably. Theseus, probably not. Romulus, definitely not.
No, it's fair enough. That's fair enough. The historiography of it
it's just myths.
Yeah, they're supposed to have lived, well, just let's jump straight into it.
They
were supposed to have lived in the 8th century BC. But the earliest accounts seem to be from the 3rd, maybe 4th century at the absolute earliest. They're mostly lost. And the real accounts we've got, the best one really is Livy and Plutarch, which is 1st century BC AD.
Yeah.
So 700 years after it was supposed to have happened.
I mean, there's no way I'm trusting any of this as being history.
Yeah. And a bit more like Theseus is there are like gods that appear in the story and all sorts of bits and bobs where you're like, well, that didn't happen though, did it?
Yeah.
It's more than strange credulity. It just didn't happen. It's more that.
But it tells us a lot about what the Romans thought of themselves.
Exactly. That's why it's even more valuable than just what it is on its surface. Yeah.
And it's quite ignoble really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's horrible. There's loads of really horrible story. This, just so you know,
they're not descended from they're not great men or anything who had wealth and power. They were just raised by wolves, apparently.
Although that does lend to it that if you were going to make something up from whole cloth, why would you make something up that's so bad that casts such shadow on you? Because even in ancient times, rape and murder was still bad.
Yeah, it's not believe like, it or not,
right? And so some people said that although it's a myth, there must be. Well, not must be, but it's likely that there's something there.
Reflects some behaviour.
That the legends or the myths are probably older than the 3rd or 4th century. Mm. But that doesn't mean Romulus and Remus are historical figures.
No.
But we've got a fair amount of detail.
Mm.
So just to talk about the historiography briefly, we're going to be talking again mainly about Plutarch's lives because it's sort of the gold standard, for want of a better word. And some people might disagree.
Plutarch had done a lot of work in his own day, collecting everyone's stories and then synthesizing the narrative. So it's like, okay, well, he's done all the work for us. Mm. We could spend all the time, and he's got access to sources we don't have. So we could go through all of the sources that he went through and then essentially write the same narrative, or we can just use his.
Mm. Yeah. So there's Dionysus of Halicarnassus. Livy talks about it. Ovid has a big thing all about it, the Fausti. Cassius Dio. But then there's people that you mentioned that are lost. So there's one of the very, very earliest Roman historians, Fabius Pictar, who lots of people like Livy and Plutarch and all sorts of people, Tacitus, mention him a fair bit. But he's almost entirely lost. We've got a few fragments of Pictar, but it's essentially lost.
What century was he?
So he was like the 3rd century, I believe, late 3rd century
old,
BC.
Really?
Yeah, right.
Not even that old.
So, and he is the earliest account, and that is still hundreds of years after they were supposed to have lived. So, so there we go. And other people like Quintilius, all sorts of people that are lost. But as you said, what it tells us about what the Romans thought about themselves in the 3rd century and more present, it's much more valuable for that rather than thinking of it as real history.
Shows you why they've got this huge chip on their shoulder, really, doesn't it? You know, who are we? Well, we're just the bastard sons of a she-wolf. You know, don't really hold ourselves in much regard, so we're going to be an armed camp.
We're the descendants of kidnappers and rapists.
Yeah.
We'll get into that. The rapes of the Sabines.
Yeah.
So one of the first things I wanted to say, just before we get stuck into Romulus and Remus, is that Rome has got basically sort of two origin stories, really, because there's the origin story of Aeneas.
Yeah. I was going to ask you how these connected. So I mean, it's been years since I've read it, so I didn't do any homework for this, I'm afraid. But you did, so that's okay. They are somehow connected to Aeneas, but it's unclear in my mind how that's the case. Aeneas, for anyone who doesn't know, flees from Troy. He was a Trojan. Yeah. Flees from Troy after the Greeks destroy Troy and then sails around the Mediterranean, goes to Carthage, has an affair with, who's the founder of Carthage?
Dido, Queen Dido.
Dido, that's it, Dido. Has an affair with her, breaks her heart or something like that, and then goes to Italy and... What is it? Sets up Alba Longa, doesn't it?
Yeah, his son sets up Alba Longa. Right. But yeah. I mean, it's all very Odysseus-esque.
Yeah.
His travels home.
Yeah.
So, let's talk about that. So the Aeneid.
In the Aeneid, yeah.
So the Aeneid was written by Virgil in the age of Augustus.
Yes.
So, again, 700-800 years after they were supposed to have lived. And it's sort of very consciously, or pretty consciously, sort of made up. Augustus commissioned him, like you say, I want a new epic poem.
Yeah.
You know, they've got, the Greeks have got the Iliad and the Odyssey. Rome needs its own thing. So the greatest poet of the day, Virgil, wrote the Aeneid.
And, that's just, I love how it's literally just copying them.
Yeah.
We don't have any ideas of our own. Take their ideas.
Like Hollywood today, yeah. Just keep rebooting things.
Yeah, yeah.
Aeneas is a character in the Iliad, a relatively minor one, although he's not all that minor. He's a Trojan, mm-hmm. just straight up a Trojan man,
yep.
Aeneas. And he's one of the few that flee and live. There's a famous story where he carries his father on his back, which is meant to be, you know, really, really virtuous thing to save aged father, to physically carry him.
Yeah. I mean, it is. So.
And so Aeneas is supposed to be, he's not quite a Diomedes or Achilles, but he's a very good fighter. Very, very, very good.
We've got to do a Diomedes episode at some point.
I think Diomedes is my favourite character from the Iliad.
He's just such a mad lad.
Yeah, yeah.
He's just, oh, there's a god in my way. Ugh.
He's as badass, if not more, than Achilles.
Yeah, yeah,
it
absolutely.
Seems.
But no, he's not famous for some reason. We'll do an episode.
Yeah. But anyway. Aeneas seems to be, he's like Hector. He's one of the best Trojan warriors. And anyway, when they lose, eventually ends up in Italy, in Latium.
Hmm.
Which is the region in and around and to the north of Rome. And he takes a princess, Latia, is that her name?
Latia? I can't remember.
Lavinia, right. Who's the daughter of the king of the Latins. And in the Aeneid, there's a big battle where he kills a barbarian king and sets himself up as basically the king of the Latins. And then it's his son who goes on to found a small town called Alba Longa, which is very close to the site of Rome. The famous Seven Hills of Rome is right near Alba Longa, though not right there. And so the dates, the chronology of when Aeneas would have lived is pretty much mythological, but you're still talking probably hundreds of years before Romulus and Remus were supposed to have lived. It might be the 11th, 12th, 13th century BC.
Yeah.
So anyway, his sons...
just as a quick pause on that, if the Trojan War is something like, you know, 10th century, 11th century, and this is within one man's lifetime, then yeah, it is going to be literally hundreds of years before Romulus and Remus. Mm. So they're generations removed from Aeneas.
Yeah, yeah. And so so Aeneas' son sets up the town of Alba Longa, and then there's a string of kings for a while. Until we get to the age when Romulus and Remus were supposed to have lived. And again, Alba Longa is not exactly on the site of Rome, but it's right there.
Was it historically a real place or not?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah,
yeah, I was under the impression it was real.
Yeah, yeah. I think the archaeology shows it's real, yeah.
Okay. Didn't the Romans destroy it?
Eventually they bested everyone, didn't they? So, but,
This isn't like VA then, where they didn't just like kill everyone there.
No, right. No. They incorporated them more.
Right.
So we get to roughly the age of Romulus and Remus, whenever that was. there was a king there of Alba Longa called Procca.
Right.
Procca. And he had two sons, Numitor and Amulius.
Right.
And they're the two.
Good names.
Yeah, and they're the two that sort of feature largely in the beginning of the story of Romulus and Remus. So just to get into it, Numitor was the legit king,
mm-hmm.
But his brother Amulius decides to depose him and murder all his sons.
As you do,
you know, it's a tick box. You know.
Well, Machiavelli would endorse it, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to overthrow the king, you've got to kill his family.
And he had a daughter as well, and Amulius forces her to become sort of a virgin priestess, so yep. she can never marry, never have kids, and therefore never sort of threaten his mm-hmm. position in any way. And they've said she's sort of the first Vestal Virgin.
Yeah, here's the creation of the institution.
But she isn't chaste because she gets pregnant one way or another.
Well, I mean, she was forced into it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't blame her, you know.
Now, how she got pregnant, that it's up for debate, and that is where things start getting a bit mythological.
Right. So God came down.
Possibly. The accounts don't agree. So like Ovid and Livy and Plutarch all disagree a bit. But I've got a relatively long paragraph here from the book Dynasty by Tom Holland.
Oh, yeah.
Do you mind if I read that?
Go ahead.
It's a fairly long paragraph, but it sets out the first third or the first half, maybe even, of the Romulus and Remus story.
Right, okay.
And we can go into it in more detail with what Plutarch says. But
there you go.
The great writer, Tom Holland, one of my favourites.
He's fantastic.
He's great, isn't he? In his book Dynasty, which actually talks about the Julio-Claudians mostly, the House of the Caesars, but we do get a bit about Romulus and Remus. He wrote this, quote, "The story of Rome began with a rape. A princess, a consecrated virgin, was surprised and ravished. Various accounts were given of the fateful assault. Some said that it happened in her sleep, when she dreamed that a man of miraculous beauty led her down to a shady riverbank and abandoned her there, lost and alone. Others claimed that she was seized in the middle of the night. In the middle of a thunderstorm while collecting water from a sacred grove. One story even told of a mysterious phallus which sprung up from the ashes of the royal hearth and took not the princess but her slave girl."
Right.
And there's all sorts of different, there's all sorts of different things there. All were agreed, though, on the resulting pregnancy, and most, a few curmudgeonly revisionists aside, had no doubt that the rapist was a god. No doubt. Two historians, Marcus Octavius and Licinius Massa, claimed the rapist had been the girl's uncle, who then, to conceal the result of his criminal action, killed his niece and handed her newborn twins over to a swineherd.
Now, okay, let's pause on that for a second. That might be a true story. It may well be that some ancient Italian rapist raped his niece and then killed her out of shame and then handed the children off to a swineherd. That, like... No doubt a rapist was a god. I have slight doubts. Maybe a rapey uncle. I have more faith in that.
All right, yeah. Sorry, yeah, Occam's razor.
Yeah. If I'm just, you know, but sorry, carry on.
Was it Mars or a dodgy uncle?
Zeus gets around, doesn't he?
Who hand them off to a swineherd. One of the other accounts is that it was a, it wasn't a swineherd. It was just a, what is it when you, it's not pigs, it's, cattle.
Oh, cowherd?
Yeah, a cowherd. Okay.
I mean, it seems to be an irrelevant detail,
yeah,
though, you know?
Right, yeah. So Mars, the spiller of blood, had planted his seed in a mortal womb. Two godlike boys were duly born of the rape. These twins, the offspring of their mother's shame, had no sooner been delivered than they were dumped into a nearby river, the Tiber. Still, the wonders did not cease. Swept along on the floodwaters of the river, the box to which the babies had been consigned eventually ran aground below a steep hill named the Palatine.
Can we pause there a second as well? Right, okay. So this, I find this very interesting, right? So now we've got not one Hercules, but two Hercules. These two, you know, and not born of Zeus, but of Ares or Mars, obviously. And this being put into a box on a river. Very much Moses, Sargon of Akkad.
Very Moses, Sargon of Akkad. Or even one of the earlier, is it Ra? Or one of the Egyptian deities, a very similar thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just very interesting how it's these old motifs that seem to have just... And the thing is, it's not that I think that they've been consciously taken either. I think they're just like in the collective consciousness of people at the time, you know. It's just, you know, that's what people thought. Mm-hmm. In the same way that, like, you know, all the social contract theorists just assume we just lived in the woods. You know, just before we came together and formed society. It's like, yeah, that didn't happen. But, you know, that's, they just all thought that, you know. But anyway.
Well, we could say these things, like, where do the myths come from? Just let's assume they weren't conjured out of thin air in the 3rd or 4th century BC. Where exactly did they come from? And historians have argued about, you know, do myths start on one day? Is it like one day that myth didn't exist and the next day someone made it up and it snowballs from there? Or is it much more... shading in that, for example, the Brothers Grimm would go around and collect all the stories they heard of and then collate them, put their own spin on it slightly. You end up with this mishmash of fiction and non-fiction, and it's never say where it really came from.
It's going to be that, isn't it? Right. It's going to be this organic sort of thing that eventually coalesces into a coherent story through many hands and many tellings. But I mean, you know, it's like the original Sargon legend is that it's something like he's the unwanted child of a priestess or something like that. She puts him in a basket, covers it with bitumen, and then puts him on the river, and he's picked up by a gardener in the royal gardens. And so this, you know, sending kids down rivers, probably not something that happened in isolation. Probably not the only time that, you know, I mean, mothers now dump their babies in dumpsters and stuff. So, you know, it's probably something that happened with relative frequency. And so out of this abandonment, because you're never going to find the mother, obviously. So this gives them like a sort of out of nothing creation story, as in, oh, well, we just found him on a box on the river. So, okay, well, then he's come from nowhere, you know. And so there's no lineage to trace further back from that. You know, so you get this origin point that then blooms out into the miraculous child who grows into the great conqueror. And so you don't have to try and find like a strange lineage and stuff like that. I always figured that from a narrative point of view, that was the reason. It becomes a sort of definitive narrative starting point. But again, not that I think any one person has created that.
It's funny, actually, the parallels between the Sargon origin and Moses. It's very, 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 very similar, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I've got a theory on it, if we want to diverge slightly. I mean, the Sargon legend obviously predates the legend of Moses, and obviously was something that was going to be found in Babylon when the Hebrew intellectual elites were in the Babylonian captivity, where they must have got it from. Right. You know, I don't think for a second that they didn't. And then once they, once Cyrus released them, they took it back to Israel with them. Just seems to be a common sense genealogy of the idea.
Why
wouldn't I believe that? You know, why would I think it was anything else? It just seems to be all the pieces are there. I haven't got any proof that that's, you know, direct causal effect, but come on. They went to Mesopotamia where they had this great King Sargon, and here's his origin legend. And then we just happened to have exactly the same one for Moses after we spent, you know, 500 years or whatever in Mesopotamia. I mean, come on. Call me cynical. That's what I think it is.
Any idea that you expose unwanted children? Very common.
Oh, yeah.
Very common. And how often not that you murder them, you leave them alive
to their fate.
Exposed.
Yeah.
And now, how often could that have resulted in the kid not dying for whatever reason?
Well, that's the thing. Like, and I can imagine if you've got a civilization that's built on a great river, such as one of the Mesopotamian ones or Egypt, then the mother's putting the baby in a basket or a box and then sending it down the river is essentially leaving it in the hands of the gods. And yeah, it's very likely that, you know, they wash up on a bank somewhere else and someone, oh, a baby, it needs help. You know, I'm going to help it. Probably happened quite a lot.
You could maybe fool yourself into the idea that I didn't kill them. Fate wanted them dead.
Yeah.
And so,
or fate will put them in the hands of a loving person.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Not my responsibility.
Exactly. Yeah.
A bit, Alec Baldwin. So then, just refusing to take responsibility. So they washed up at the steep, below a steep hill named the Palatine. There, in the mouth of a cave, beneath the dripping fruit-laden branches of a fig tree, the twins were discovered by a she-wolf. And the wolf, rather than devouring them, licked them clean of mud and offered their hungry mouths its teats. A passing swineherd, witnessing this miraculous scene, came clambering down the slopes of the Palatine to their rescue. The she-wolf slunk off. The two boys, rescued by the swineherd and given the names Remus and Romulus, grew up to become peerless warriors. In due course, standing on the Palatine, Romulus had seen 12 eagles, a sure sign from the gods that he should found on the summit of the hill the city that ever afterwards bore his name. It was he who ruled Rome as its first king. And then here's the bit that we were talking about. Again, this is still Tom Holland. This, at any rate, was the story told centuries later by the Roman people to explain the origins of their city and the sheer glorious scale of their martial achievements. Foreigners, when they learned of it, certainly found it all too plausible that Romulus had been fathered by Mars, the god of war, and suckled by a she-wolf, appeared to those brought into bruising contact with his descendants to explain much about the Roman character. End quote. So it's a very long paragraph there, but I think that, you know, says nearly everything you would need to say about the beginning bit of it.
I mean, it's probably not beyond the realms of possibility that, you know, children get raised by wolves. I mean, there have been examples of it.
I think there has been an actual example of that, someone in the Amazon was basically raised like Mowgli, like an actual feral child, and it was, I think, a pack of wolves.
Yeah.
Or could it have been? I don't know, but I think something like that has happened.
I'm sure I've heard, you know, stories about these sort of things happening. So not the most unrealistic thing. So I guess if you're, you know, some 5th century foreigner, you arrive at this city called Rome that you've never really heard of, and they say, yeah, well, this is how our city came to be, but oh, Christ. You know, it's no less likely than any other city's origin story, is it?
Yeah.
You know, so, and in fact, as you know, it's just as likely as some of them, to be honest. So, yeah.
It's funny, when you go to Rome, you do see the iconography of it a fair bit.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny when, there's two things I was a little bit surprised when I first went to Rome, was that you see that kind of everywhere, and, you know, the old thing, SPQR, the Senate and People of Rome, You see that everywhere, like yep. Just things that are run by the state, like phone boxes or.
I would though if I were them. I would have it on there.
Or sewer caps.
Yeah.
They've got SPQR on them all, and you're like, oh well, that's very quaint.
Yeah. Well, I would though. You know, like what are you gonna do? Not use it? It looks gorgeous. You know, and the laurel wreaths and stuff like that. You'd have all the iconography. Why would you not?
Yeah. And so you do see that, and apparently Livy talks of, Livy does talk of that apparently there was this sort of famous, quite large bronze statue of it, which is lost. Now there's lots of copies of it in Rome, but there was an original one that Livy knew of that apparently dated from sort of the fourth century. So even though it might be lost in the actual mists of time, it's still very steeped. Mm. The story is still... Mm. Been around for quite a long time. Incidentally, the swineherd, the father, the surrogate father, is called Faustius.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.